The trees closed around her like a held breath finally released. Vera walked until the road dissolved beneath her boots, until the gravel gave way to packed earth, and then to the soft giving of fallen leaves and moss, until the sound of the checkpoint, the distant murmur of voices, the occasional bark of a dog, the idle rumble of an engine faded into the background noise of the forest. She did not stop. She could not stop. Stopping meant thinking, and thinking meant remembering, and remembering meant the satchel against her ribs would become unbearable. The fog was thicker here. It clung to the trunks of the birch trees like gauze, wrapping them in layers of white that made the forest feel less like a place and more like a room she had entered without permission. The cold had moved past her skin and settled into the marrow of her bones. She pulled her coat tighter around the satchel. Though tightening it served no purpose, the weight was not on her shoulders, but inside her, lodged somewhere between her sternum and her spine, pressing outward with a quiet insistence that reminded her of nothing so much as a toothache. She walked for an hour, perhaps two. Time had become unreliable since the checkpoint, since Lucas had stepped forward and disappeared behind the gray door. She measured distance in breaths and in the ache in her calves, not in meters or minutes. The forest was featureless, a succession of identical trees, identical fog, identical silence, and she moved through it the way a sentence moves through a paragraph, without direction or destination, simply because the grammar demanded continuation. Then the trees thinned, the fog lifted slightly, and ahead of her, through a gap in the trunks, she saw light. Not the orange glow of a searchlight or the white glare of a floodlamp, but the small yellow light of a fire, a campfire, burning in a clearing she had not noticed through the fog. She stopped. She pressed herself against the trunk of a birch tree and listened. The fire crackled. Something metal clinked against stone. A voice low, male speaking Czech with a German accent hummed a tune she did not recognize. She crouched lower. Through the gap in the trees, she could see the clearing clearly now, a circle of bare earth surrounded by a ring of stones, a small fire burning in the center, and a figure sitting on an upturned crate beside it, a rifle leaning against the tree behind him. A scout. One of the border guards who patrolled the perimeter on foot, far from the checkpoint's floodlights and its dogs and its men in uniform. He was young, younger than Lucas, maybe 19. He wore a greatcoat that was too large for him and a cap pulled low over his eyes. He was whittling something with a knife, the shavings curling onto the earth at his feet. The firelight caught the side of his face and revealed a smudge of dirt on his cheekbone, the faintest suggestion of acne along his jaw. He looked bored. He looked like a boy who had been assigned a task he did not understand, and was passing the hours the only way he knew how. Vera remained still. She counted his breaths. She counted the crackles of the fire. She counted the seconds between each time he looked up from his whittling to scan the tree line. 30 seconds, 45, 60. He looked up every minute, always in the same direction, always with the same distracted air of a man whose attention was elsewhere. She needed to pass the clearing. There was no avoiding it. The forest narrowed here, compressed between a ridge of rock on the left and a ravine on the right, and the clearing sat squarely in the bottleneck. She could go around, but the terrain was unfamiliar, the fog was thick, and going around meant taking time, and time was something she did not have. The scout might patrol outward. He might double back. He might decide to relieve his boredom by searching the trees. She needed to wait. She needed him to look away. She needed the fire to burn lower, or the fog to thicken, or the night to deepen into something that made the forest less visible and more forgiving. She needed one of the many things that were not going to happen. Instead, she did the only thing she could do. She waited. She pressed herself against the birch tree and closed her eyes and listened to the fire and thought about the satchel against her ribs and the 23 sheets of paper she had carried through checkpoints and forests and nights that would never end. And she thought about Jiri's hand on her arm in the Café Louvre, firm and insistent, and the way he had looked at her when he said, "Paper is heavier than lead, Vera. You know this. You translate words. You know how much they weigh when nobody asked you to carry them." She had laughed at the time. She had said, "Words are light. That's their advantage." And he had smiled that thin, cynical smile that had never quite reached his gray eyes and said, "That's what they want you to believe." She opened her eyes. The scout was still whittling. The fire still crackled. The fog still clung to the trees. Nothing had changed. Nothing ever changed until it did, and then everything changed at once, and you were left standing in the wreckage of what used to be ordinary. The scout stopped whittling. He set the knife down on the crate beside him. He reached for his rifle and checked the action, his movements mechanical, practiced, performed 1,000 times without attention. Then he stood, stretched, and walked toward the edge of the clearing, toward the tree line on the far side, toward the direction she needed to go. He lit a cigarette. He inhaled deeply. He exhaled a plume of smoke that the fog swallowed without a trace. He stood there for a moment, looking out into the trees, his face illuminated from below by the firelight, his expression unreadable. Vera held her breath. She counted to 10. She counted to 20. She opened her eyes again. He was still standing there, still smoking, still looking into the trees, still not looking at her. She moved. She stepped from behind the birch tree and walked into the clearing, her boots making no sound on the packed earth, her body angled slightly away from the fire, her face turned toward the ground. She kept her hand on the satchel. She kept her breathing slow and even. She walked past the ring of stones. She walked past the fire. She walked past the upturned crate and the knife and the curling shavings on the earth. She walked past the rifle leaning against the tree. She was 3 paces from the scout when he spoke. "Stop," he said. His voice was not threatening. It was not even authoritative. It was the voice of a boy asking someone to pause mid-sentence, the voice of a person performing a routine gesture without conviction. "Stop." The word hung in the cold air between them like smoke. Vera stopped. She did not turn. She stared down at the gravel, her gaze fixed on the earth. Her fingers remained curled tight around the satchel's frayed strap. She kept breathing. The scout took a step toward her. She could smell the cigarette smoke on his breath, the stale tobacco mixed with something sweeter coffee, perhaps, or the faint sweetness of the cheap cigarettes the border guard smoked, the kind that burned too hot and tasted of chemicals. He stopped 2 paces from her. She could feel his presence the way you feel heat from a stove. You don't need to see it to know it's there. "Your papers," he said. Vera turned her head slightly. She looked at him from the corner of her eye. He was younger than she had first thought. 18, maybe. His face was round, his nose slightly crooked, his eyes wide and uncertain in the firelight. He was holding his rifle loosely, the barrel pointed at the ground, the safety engaged. She could see the engraving on the receiver. See Hatchek Z 1947, a Czechoslovakian-made rifle. A weapon made by men who had once been her neighbors, her colleagues, the people who bought bread at the same bakery and drank beer at the same pub and pretended, for a few months in the spring, that the world could be different. "My papers," she said, her voice was steady, steadier than she felt, "they're in my pocket. Take them out." She reached into her coat with her free hand, the left one, leaving the right on the satchel end, withdrew the envelope with the forged documents inside. She held it out to him, palm up, the way you offer a coin to a beggar or a flower to a grave. He took the envelope. He did not open it. He held it in his left hand, the rifle still in his right, and he looked at her with an expression she could not read curiosity, perhaps, or pity, or the vague discomfort of a person who has been asked to perform a duty that feels, on some level, inappropriate. "What's in the bag?" he asked. Vera felt the satchel against her ribs. She felt the 23 sheets of paper pressing against her palm, through the leather. She felt the weight of them the weight Jiri had warned her about, the weight of words that had been written by someone who believed they mattered, the weight of a truth that had chosen her to carry it, the weight of everything she had lost to bring it this far. "Translations," she said, "for the ministry." The same words she had said to the checkpoint soldier. The same lie, the same truth dressed in bureaucratic language. Translations, words that meant nothing and everything, words that could be rearranged into a confession if someone tried hard enough. The scout looked down at the envelope in his hand. He looked back at her. He looked at the satchel. He looked at the fire. He looked at the cigarette burning between his fingers. He exhaled. "You should go," he said. Vera did not move. She waited. He tossed the envelope back at her. It landed on the earth at her feet, the envelope slightly crumpled, the papers inside shifting with a soft rustle. He turned away. He walked back toward the fire. He picked up his knife and sat down on the crate and resumed his whittling, the shavings curling onto the earth at his feet, the firelight catching the side of his face, the smudge of dirt on his cheekbone, the faintest suggestion of acne along his jaw. Vera picked up the envelope. She slid it back into her pocket. She turned and walked away from the clearing, away from the fire, away from the boy who had been a soldier for an hour and a child for the rest of his life. And she walked until the trees closed around her again, and the fog swallowed the clearing, and the sound of the fire faded into the background noise of the forest. Then she stopped. She stopped because her legs would not carry her further. She stopped because the satchel against her ribs had become unbearable. She stopped because she needed to think, and thinking meant remembering, and remembering meant the weight of everything she had carried, the poems she had translated, the coded references she had not understood, the satchel Jiri had forced into her hands, the floorboard she had pried loose, the papers she had hidden beneath them, the searchers who had found nothing, the telegram that had arrived at noon, the ministry that had suspended her for Western associations, the colonel who had visited her mother and spoken of loneliness, the safe house on Masarykova Ulus that Lukas had betrayed, the checkpoint where the dog had barked and the boy had disappeared behind a gray door, and the soldier had stamped her papers and told her to move. She stopped because she was at the edge of the forest, where the trees gave way to open sky, and the sky was black and starless, and the cold was absolute, and the satchel was the heaviest thing she had ever carried, and she could feel her arms trembling as she struggled to bear its weight any further. She sat down on a fallen log. The bark was rough beneath her palms. The wood was damp. The cold seeped through her coat and into her thighs and her knees and her ankles. She kept the satchel on her lap, her hands resting on the leather, feeling the shape of the papers inside through the worn material. 23 sheets. 23 sheets that contained the truth about what had happened, about what was happening, about the names and dates and places that someone had written down with a steady hand, and a clear mind while the tanks rolled through the streets, and the soldiers stood in doorways, and the city held its breath. She had survived the checkpoint. She had passed the scout. She was beyond the border markers, beyond the fences, beyond the searchlights. She was in the unknown, and the unknown was vast and cold and indifferent, and the satchel was still hers, and she was still carrying it, and she was still alive. She thought about burning it. The thought came to her without invitation, without warning, the way thoughts come when you are alone and cold and carrying something that is slowly crushing you. She thought about lighting the fire in the clearing, returning to it, finding the boy still whittling, still smoking, still looking bored and asking him for a match, or striking one herself with the friction of flint if she had one, or simply tearing the pages free and holding them to the flame and watching the words curl and blacken and dissolve into ash. She thought about the poem, the innocuous poem she had translated in the ministry, the one that had seemed harmless on the surface, a collection of nature imagery, birds and rivers, and the changing seasons, until she had noticed the discrepancy in the author's signature. The dates scrawled in a different hand, specific words replaced with subtle variations, and the English version she had produced diverging from the original Czech in ways that only she would notice, because she was a translator, and noticing was what she did. 23 sheets of paper lay silent beneath the bedroom floor, heavy as a stone. The line had appeared in the English version, but not the Czech. She had dismissed it as a stylistic choice. Now, sitting in the dark with the manuscript against her ribs, she understood. The poem was a cipher. Each bird was a name. Each river a place. The innocuous verses were a map, and she had translated the map for the enemy without knowing it. Memory was a translation too, and every translation was a betrayal. She thought about burning it. She thought about the relief that would follow the sudden lightness in her chest, the absence of the weight that had pressed against her ribs for weeks, the way her breathing would deepen and her shoulders would relax, and the world would become manageable again, small and simple and survivable. She thought about walking into the unknown without the satchel, light and unburdened, and disappearing into the woods and the fog and the night, and living. She thought about burning it. And then she thought about the single page. The thought came to her the way a light comes on in an empty room suddenly, without explanation, illuminating everything in its path. She reached into her coat pocket, and her fingers closed on something thin and rectangular, something she had not felt since the morning she had torn it from the bundle and slipped it into her pocket, something she had been carrying without knowing she was carrying it. She drew it out. It was a single sheet of paper, torn roughly from the top of the satchel's contents, the edges jagged, the handwriting small and precise, the ink faded to a brownish gray. It was the first page of the manuscript, the title page. The words at the top were clear enough, even in the dim light, Seznam J-Men Amist, a list of names and places, the beginning of the truth. She held it in her palm. It was lighter than she expected, lighter than a feather, lighter than a thought, lighter than anything she had imagined a truth could weigh. It was one page out of 23. One page containing the first names, the first dates, the first places, a fragment, a shard, a piece of a whole that would never be whole again. She thought about burning it, about the finality of fire, the clean erasure of ash, but fire would draw attention. Fire would leave evidence, and she had already drawn enough attention. She thought about the weight of the satchel against her ribs, the way Jiri had warned her paper is heavier than Liden. She understood now what he had meant. Paper carried consequences. Paper carried names. Paper could get you killed. Lied, at least, was honest. She struck a match. Her hands were steady as she pulled the match from her coat pocket, the ones she had bought at a pharmacy in Karlovy very 3 days ago, the ones she had kept for emergencies, the ones she had hoped she would never need. She struck it against the side of the box. The flame bloomed small and orange, a tiny sun in the darkness, and she held it between her thumb and forefinger and felt the heat on her skin. She held the flame to the edge of the satchel. She walked to the edge of the fallen log and set the satchel down on the ground. She did not burn it. She simply let it go. She placed it on the damp earth between two roots, the way you place something on a grave respectfully, reluctantly, knowing that it will stay there forever. She did not look away. The first page dissolved the title, the list of names, the dates, the places, all of it fading into the damp, all of it sinking into the fog that rose into the air and was swallowed by the darkness. The second page followed. The third. The fourth. The names of people who had written this manuscript with a steady hand and a clear mind while the tanks rolled through the streets and the soldiers stood in doorways and the city held its breath were washed away, and she did not look away. She watched until the satchel was empty. She watched until the fire had consumed everything it could reach. She watched until the only thing left was a pile of gray ash and a few charred fragments that crumbled at the touch, and the smell of burnt paper that clung to her clothes and her hair and the inside of her nostrils, and the silence of the forest that had witnessed it all and would carry it into the trees and the earth and the wind and forget it, the way forests forget everything. She walked deeper into the woods, away from the checkpoint, away from the border, away from the city that was no longer hers, carrying nothing but a single page in her pocket and the knowledge that she had left the truth behind to save herself, and that surviving was not the same as being forgiven. She felt light, she felt empty, she felt alive. She reached into her coat pocket and drew out the single page, the one she had torn free, the one she had kept, the one she had been carrying without knowing she was carrying it. She held it in her palm and looked at it one last time. The ink was still legible. The names were still legible. The first three names on the list, the first three places, the first three dates, she could read them. She could carry them. She could remember them. She folded the page carefully along the existing crease and slipped it back into her pocket. She stood up from the log. Her legs were stiff. Her body ached. Her coat smelled of damp wool and old rain. Her fingers were stained with ink. She turned away from the satchel and the dirt and the empty space where the weight had been, and she walked into the forest, into the fog, into the unknown. Bearing only that single sheet against her heart, and the cold in her bones, and the silence in her ears, and the memory of a city that was no longer hers, and the knowledge that she had destroyed the evidence to save herself, and that the truth was gone, and that she was alive, and that alive was not the same as forgiven, and that she would carry the page and the stain and the memory for the rest of her life. The way you carry a wound quietly, carefully, without complaint, knowing that the weight is yours and yours alone. The trees closed around her. The fog thickened. The night deepened. She walked because there was nowhere else to go, and because stopping was not an option, and because the page was in her pocket, and the cold was in her bones, and the silence was everywhere, and she was still moving. Behind her, the ashes cooled while the woods drank the smoke, the mist claiming the clearing until the night held its breath, as it always did, waiting for the next word, the next order, the next poem that was not a poem at all, but a message in disguise.